Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
We are alive at the Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 2. This is the very first week of November 2020. We have a super exciting episode tonight. I am just can't wait to see what we say and what we learn as we talk through the show. We're going to talk about gear. We've been cruising the internet and looking at different gear. Jeff may even gone to Cabela's and looked at some stuff. I was thinking he may have. I don't know. Did you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely have. Good. I'm excited about gear. Gear is the best, one of the best episodes of the year because you're anticipating going into the ice fishing season.
And we certainly are. It's been getting cold again and a little warm, but it's getting cold, so we're excited about that. We have a wonderful interview tonight that we're going to have with Max from Hardwater Freaks. This guy is super intense about fishing and super intense about ice fishing. And I think I said, what was it, cool about, like, what was the cool meter on the interview? Like 35?
Oh, it was
times.
Like 6 or 7 times. Yeah, we had a cool meter. I kept track. Like I would go ding, another cool, ding,
well,
another cool.
It was cool. And he's super knowledgeable about ice fishing and locating. And he's really pumped on panfish and big bluegills and big crappies. So he's going to talk to us about that. Then I think we're to our next favorite topic, Jeff.
Beer.
So, what are you drinking tonight, sir?
So, this beer, I got trick-or-treating.
Wait a minute. They give beer trick-or-treating?
They do. I got one.
I live in the wrong area.
I know. I have.
That was a thing.
It's a Deschutes Fresh Haze IPA. Deschutes. Deschutes.
Hopefully you don't have the Deschutes when you're done drinking it.
D-E-S-C-H-U-T-E-S. Deschutes.
All right. We'll add that to the list of things that are never going to call us about a sponsorship.
Yeah. Deschutes. It's intensely juicy, irresistibly hazy. I almost said hairy. Freshly squeezed. No fruit was harmed in the making of this beer.
I'm having an incredible juvenile moment as you read through that beer.
It says no fruit was harmed in the making of this beer.
All right. Drink your Deschutes.
All right. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Deschutes. Excellent. It's a free beer. I got it.
It is a free beer. So it gets a couple of points just on the free beer.
Actually, this is really, really good.
Really?
So I love it. Yes. Very good.
Okay.
So Jason, what do you got?
I don't know.
Do you have Deschutes?
No, I don't really know what I'm drinking. So I'm showing Jeff. Only Jeff can see this. It's a nondescript brown bottle with a cork.
Wow.
So my dad, during the COVID lockdown, has gotten quite bored. And so he's taken up brewing beer. And so this is a home brew from my dad. And that's what I'm going to drink tonight.
So you're drinking a Kilby.
It's a Kilby. Yeah, and it's a recipe or something. He gets the stuff and makes it. But thankfully, he doesn't just make it up as he goes, because that would be bad. So we'll see. We'll see what this... I've had some of these, and they usually taste pretty good. So we'll just...
Ooh, wow. Like it's that. Like a pop top.
Yeah, it's a pop top. So it's refillable. So... kind of how this has been working for me, and it's been working really well, is when he shows up, I give him the old bottles, and he puts more beer in them. Look at that.
That looks really good,
it is.
Jay.
It's really good beer.
So you don't have a clue what style or anything. It's just beer.
But it's good, and I like it.
It comes in a glass.
It comes in because he brews it, and then he takes the bottles and recycles them. It's very ecologically friendly.
I'll enjoy my Deschutes, and you enjoy your... Your homebrew. Homebrew. Awesome.
So there you go. So I'm branching out. Can you tell?
We haven't even seen an old style yet this year.
Honestly, I haven't been able to find any.
Uh-oh. Did they stop?
No, they still make it, but I think the distributor in Iowa tends to not. At least in my area, they don't carry it. I might have to make a run for Chicago.
Let's talk about some show business, Jay.
Let's do that.
The patron... a great way to support us. You can donate money to the show and offset our habit here. We are fully nonprofit at this point, or anti-profit. I'm not quite sure what you'd call us, but feel free to give us some money. We are on Instagram and Facebook. You can find everything about us at thehardwatershow.com, our website. You can find all of our episodes and a link to the gear. It's a pretty cool spot. You can see a picture of Jason and I standing on the ice somewhere.
And we look about like we sound, I think. I think we do. Don't you think we look like we sound? I think we do.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So we have YouTube where we paste videos.
Yep. Never been there.
Yeah. Jason's never been there. You can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com. We will answer everything. We read it eventually. And we are at about 54,000 downloads right now. Actually, it might be 56. I think that's not updated since last week. But
so people are continuing to listen, and we thank you very much for that.
We appreciate your listening, yeah, yes. And I know everybody else in the world is as excited as we are to go ice fish. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're all getting the itch for this right now. Tell you what.
There's a couple trends in gear this year. One of the trends, I think, is anniversary shack. So I've seen this in a couple places. Clam has a 40th anniversary Gens flip over shack. So they are kind of white, and they're made to look like his first prototypes that he built 40 years ago. And I also think other people have also built anniversary shacks this year. So that's a trend. It seems like a weird trend, but I guess the ice fishing industry is growing up. It's been around for a while, and this is a sign of that. So the another trend is tungsten. So I know we've had this for a few years, but I feel like tungsten keeps on getting more and more common. Less lead and more tungsten in almost everything we fish with. The final trend is longer rods, like 34 and 36 inch rods for ice fishing. And we use these when we were up on Lake Superior, right?
Yeah, Jay, we did.
When we were fishing for those, you're in 200 feet of water, we're fishing for bigger fish. We had those longer rods, but we did use them outside.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think I could use one of those inside my little clam. I mean, I just don't know that that would work.
But you'd see guys that get out of their pickup or walk outside. You can stand next to your ice hole and you can fish, you know, you have a little more length and then you can fish that way. So I think those are a couple trends that I saw. Did you see any other trends, Jay?
Glow, you know, the glow lures continue to dominate, I would say, the market and the new stuff for ice fishing jigs. There was a bunch of newer rod cases out. I think I saw a number of those. Man, them things are getting heavy. You know, they're really, really geared towards the ice, you know, the permanent ice shack or the wheelhouse guys, I think. Because some of those are so big anymore. I don't know how you drag them around with you on your Smitty sled or carry them around.
There was a new one by Otter, I think it was. It was like $130, but it had like, it was a hard case. It had like the foam in it for your, to keep your rod safe, and little slots for your ice lures and stuff. But yeah, it was quite big.
I mean, they're certainly nice. I mean, and you know, when you think about when people start moving from the $20 special into some of these specialty rods and the high dollar reels, and I mean, you can certainly see why $100 and some for a bulletproof case, bombproof case to keep them safe is worth it. It just, I think it comes back to that style of fishing and often discussed topic of how do you fish and having the gear that fits your style of fishing. So, which is one of the neat things about ice fishing. There's so many different ways to get to the same result.
Yeah. I mean, we even fish differently depending on what we're doing. You know, early season, I'm out there super lightweight because you have to walk. You know, late season, we're driving our cars out there and in permanent hardside shacks. So it varies.
It depends on where you live. There's some places you're never driving out. You know, down here, it's rare that you're driving out on the lake. And I mean, at least very long
right
before it goes down. Maybe you
might get
go fast enough and you have a planned exit strategy, you might be able to, but usually no, it's not. You're always walking.
So I think, Jay, we were going to talk about a few of the new items that we found. Actually, a trend we didn't talk about was it didn't seem like there was a lot of new things out there. It was innovations, but not inventions, it felt like more this year.
I agree with that. I think been such an explosion on the market of different things and kind of an arms race, if you will, about better shacks and different shacks and better rods and reels and flashers and fish finders and graphing and all this different stuff. And it's just been going gangbusters. And I think we're kind of maybe at a point where it's going to be some more nuanced stuff that people are going to see, you know, those small improvements, those small changes. And I guess that you know, well, it remains to be seen if that'll entice people to buy a whole new shack or if they won't.
Yeah, I mean, you think of some of the bigger things in the past, like when you went from like non-thermal to thermal. I mean, that was a big deal, right? We haven't seen those innovations in ice shacks lately. Probably the last biggest thing was the side doors. That was pretty popular, but really this year it's, you know, most things are insulated. There's lots of side doors, there's lots of hubs, but they're really not significantly different than last year's. They do have some new features, like they're just doing tweaks. Mm-hmm. Like one thing that Clam came out with is they have this hub mount system, right? So in your hubs, you can get a rod holder or a table, or they pop right into those hubs. Mm-hmm. And so things like that, I think, is more what we're seeing, the nuance.
Some of those accessorizing moments. And you know, I don't know if that would ever entice me to say, okay, I'm going to get a new Clam because I can hook a side table into it. But certainly is one of those elements that would come into play if you're in the market for a new one anyway. So that kind of leads me into one of the things I saw as I was cruising through the gear that I really liked on what I saw from a thing that Eskimo had out. They have a new XD series. And I would say that what's different for this for a hub is this has... So one thing I've always disliked about hubs is they have that triangle door to go through, right? I'm not shaped like a triangle.
Are you
more
sure?
More of a potato with legs, you know? And
you're not a Dorito?
Not a Dorito. And so because I eat Doritos too many, I don't fit through those triangle doors real well. You know, you get your heavy boots on or you're trying to exit or kind of come in into that shack. Sometimes you're from a little higher purchase because you're on snow and you're going kind of down in because you dug it in. And it's always kind of clunky going through those doors for me. And so Eskimo, this XD shack, actually has a door. Like it's just a door. And so you open it up and there's no fabric on the bottom for your feet to catch on or to trip over. And you go right in or right out. I really like that a lot. Especially like with little kids, you know, not the mid-sized kids, but the little kids that kind of trip all over everything anyway, you know, and having that zero entry kind of a exit or exit and entrance to the shack, I think would be pretty cool.
I actually bookmarked the same thing, Jay. I had and we did our separate research, so we didn't do this together, but I had that same exact shack because there is no fabric on the bottom, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I've tripped over that one, that fabric that sits over the top all the time. I mean, you got your giant boots on, so your feet are taller than you're used to, and you trip over that stuff all the time. And you're, like you said, you're in the snow, and maybe I'm not as flexible as I used to be. And yeah, I've tripped over that like so many times.
If I was going to buy and I haven't seen this in person, so I'd have to see it in person too. Sometimes looking at stuff online, you make a completely different decision. But man, right now, if I was going to buy one, it might be that. But I would want to take the thing down and put it back up in the store. And boy, is that, they look at you sideways when you start taking stuff down and trying to put it back up.
It's been a little challenging this year because, you know, there's not going to be an ice show, at least St. Paul one. There's going to be some smaller ones. But you know, usually you can check out all the new gear and see it mm-hmm. in person. And I really like I'm more of a try it out kind of person. So, you know, an ice shack's hard to buy online. I've done it, but I've been at Cabela's before sitting and trying out my ice shack, and then people, hey, can I help you? You've been in here too long because you've been sitting in the ice shack checking it out for so long. So,
well, it might be when you holler to your boy to say, hey, can you bring me the toilet paper?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a few shack innovations. Another shack innovation I saw, and this was from Otter, actually. They had, you know, they have some pretty nice hubs and flip overs and stuff, but they actually had like a little flag and a light, like a beacon that goes on the top of your shack that you can put on there. And I thought that was really cool because, you know, when it gets dark out, you have reflectors and stuff, but you know, it's nice to have maybe a little light up there so people don't run into you, or if your buddy's meeting you out there, you can turn it on. And
yeah, you know, that I think is probably something we overlook it a lot at night, is to light those shacks up beyond what maybe light's coming through the window on them, so you don't get smoked by a snowmobile or a car or something that's cruising across the lake. So yeah, can never be too safe. That's kind of a neat innovation.
Yeah, so that's why I think other things I found were like these innovations in ice shacks, not, you know, the brand new groundbreaking thing, but these smaller things. Mm-hmm. Did you see any other innovation kind of stuff in ice shacks, Jay?
Not in ice shacks. No, I think the side entry doors are continuing to take hold, but far as, you know, that's old news now. But no, nothing that really struck out to me or stuck out? I've struck out on things that stuck out to me.
Okay, what he said. The one thing I will say, those side doors, and clams are a little different because they kind of open on the sides, but every one I've used, and maybe I have just a bad experience one, but they're a little clunkier to set up, I think, the side door ones, because they usually have a pole in the middle.
Okay.
So I think it's a pro-con thing. It's definitely easier to get in and out. If I think back to the first front door kind of flip-overs, I mean, those were sometimes, you know, you got to crawl over your ice shack or your Vexilar, and you got to crawl over your heater and all that kind of stuff, and the door flaps and the heater. I think the side doors can help some of that, but they do seem to be a little clunkier to set up and down, I think, than the front door. Or
anything else on shacks, Jeff, at least for now? We might revisit this when we see them in person.
Yeah, I've seen some in person at Cabela's a little bit, and it didn't seem like there was a groundbreaking thing. You know, it was anniversary editions where they changed the colors, small accessories like the, you know, like the tables and the rod holders, but it didn't seem like as a whole like a big groundbreaking thing. This is kind of, you know, if we transition over to electronics, one thing I saw that's kind of almost ice shack and almost electronic was the multi-view AquaView camera. So this isn't new, but it's something I think I really want for my hard-sided shack, because you put it down the hole, then you plug in your TV to this multi-view thing, and you can kind of watch the fish underneath the ice shack. And I think I really want one of those. It's not new. You know, it's not like the ones that you see that are portable that come with a TV screen and stuff. It's just like a little control box, and then the camera you put down the hole, and you plug that into your TV. So, you know, if your kids are with you or people who don't love to fish, at least they can sit there and hang out, and when a fish comes by, they can see it on the TV. So, kind of interested in
that. Does that give you 360 view all the way around then?
I don't think so. If the ones I've seen, they still looks like one camera. I don't know if you can hook up multiple cameras, but it looks like just one camera and then like a control box that you can hook up to your TV. I'm sure there's more advanced things, but that's what it looked like to me. And I would think that'd be cool for, you know, you bring the kids out ice fishing in your hard shack, or friends who aren't big fishermen. At least if you're not catching something and you see a fish, it's interesting enough.
So I thought of what I want on an ice shack. I just thought about what I want them to innovate that would encourage me to maybe buy one. A new one.
What is that, Jay? Well,
it might be a harebrained idea, but hear me out.
Probably.
Hear me out. So you know how you have coats that have, like, you can buy like a 3-in-1 coat, right? You've got the winter coat, then you've got like the inner liner, and maybe a little vest. And you're a little vest guy. You like to wear those little vests around. But
guys from Iowa don't wear vests?
Some do. I don't want to alienate people. and that's fine. People got to do what works for them. So like an ice shack, you know, where you have the thermals, but maybe you can take a layer off if it's not super cold out and you don't need the weight of the thermal, but you just want, you know, you need something, but you don't need the super duty insulation. What do you think?
I think that could be a good idea. Kind of a, heard it like here a hybrid first. Or multi-purpose, like, you have the early ice, lightweight one when it's warmer, or late ice, you know, heavier one when you can drive your car out or bring a vehicle or a four-wheeler. Yeah. Seems like a good idea.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to hold my breath, but they'd tell you just to buy another shack.
Yeah, probably cheaper, but still, you have one if you have limited space or something. You know, I was at Home Depot the other day, and they have those jackets that have batteries built into them. You know, you can buy a jacket.
Yeah.
With a heater.
I know.
So, I mean, why not have one of those for an ice shack? Maybe you hook up your seat to one
now,
of these.
Now, a heated seat in an ice shack, that's got some metal.
So, and you got your battery there anyways. I mean, these battery boxes and all these lithium things that are all out there. You just plug in your heated seat and, you know, you're warm and toasty.
That's got, I kind of like that, like a heated seat cover, like a heated seat cover.
Yeah, you could just, any seat, you could just put a cover and it would heat your butt.
We should, maybe we need to develop that and sell that, Jeff.
I think
a hardwater fishing show seat cover. We need to work on marketing.
Yes.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I didn't expect to go there, but I just really like
the rabbit hole
being warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So any other electronic things you want to talk about, Jay?
Not really. I too, on my short list of things, if I shake some capital loose this winter, is I've been really wanting a camera. Cause I fish so many different, like I don't have a place I fish. I fish a lot of different places kind of randomly. So I'm always moving around. And so I think a camera would really help me up my scouting game. At least this is, I'm practicing my sales pitch to my wife. It would help me be more efficient and therefore theoretically catch fish quicker, which would then make me be home more.
So it might not seem it, but this is actually a marketing platform for buying things to our wives. Because every time Erin listens to the podcast, she'll be like, "You're spending more money on ice fishing?" I'm like, "Oh gosh, I said that on the podcast."
Yeah, you have to remember that Erin listens. See, I don't think Sherry doesn't listen to the show, so I'm usually pretty safe.
So a couple other electronic things. Vexilar has a new Vexilar out. It's called the 30BB.
Yeah, I saw that.
Broadband. It sounds like really what it is it has a bunch more frequencies. So, you know, if you think about a baseline fish flasher, you know, from another company like FL8, it has one frequency, right? And I think FL18, you know, you get two frequencies or, you know, you get up there a little bit. Well, the 30BB has six frequencies. So I think it adjusts more and you can see more things. It's supposed to be pretty cool. It comes with a lithium battery. And it says that's kind of the next thing. So that was, to me, a bigger thing that I saw in electronics. The other thing that I am excited about, and this isn't new, but it's new to me, is I got a Helix 7 for my boat this summer because I overinvested in open water.
You did. We covered this, but yes.
Yeah. I actually bought a new fishing net a few weeks ago and continued to overinvest in my open water fishing.
Who buys a new net 2 weeks before the season ends?
Well, here's my logic is that I'm going up. There's logic to this.
Sure.
I'm going up to go fishing. Last time I was fishing, I have a small folding net in my boat. Well, I almost lost a walleye because the net wasn't big enough and it was hard to use.
This is ice fishing show, Jeff. Ice fishing.
Well, but do you ever have that problem?
Yes. Are you going to bring that ice fishing, that net? Are you bring that net ice fishing?
I would just despite
you. You're going to have to drill like six holes just to get that thing through the ice.
So you know, when you catch bigger walleyes, you need a bigger net, Jay. I don't know if you have this problem, but, you know. So I got a new
net. I tickle them into the boat. I don't need a net.
When
you have a little boat, it's very close to the water, and it's easy just to kind of scoop them into the boat. You don't have to reach down and risk tumbling into the water to get your fish in the boat.
So I've got this Helix 7, and Helix 7's nice thing about them is you can also use them for ice fishing.
Unlike the net.
The net is probably not going to be used for ice fishing. But I am kind of on a quest, and one of our listeners actually tipped me off to this. So if you look at the Helix 7, the kit to convert it to ice is quite expensive, like $250. Mm-hmm. And then you have to buy the battery too to go in there, which is another probably $100. So he tipped me off to a few ideas of what I'm going to do for gear for the Helix 7. So I bought the ice deucer because you need a different transducer in the winter. Yep. And so I bought just the transducer separately. And the transducer is made for ice, and it was cheaper. It was like maybe, I think I got it on Amazon, it was like $70 or something. I also just bought a power cable, so you can hook up the battery. So I still have to buy a battery, but I think I'll save about $100 by doing it myself versus buying it from Hummingbird.
What are you going to mount it on?
So that's a debate right now. I actually have been looking at, and this is a trend we didn't talk about, but lithium power is kind of a big trend, like batteries. Is it lithium?
Yeah, it's lithium.
Lithium, right? What I'm looking at is those lithium shuttles from Markham. They have, like, there's other vendors out there too. And like I said, we don't advertise for anybody, but there's a couple like Amped Outdoors that we've talked about before. And then also there's another one, not Amped Outdoors, but there's a competitor to them. I can't remember the name. But there, you can just get the battery. So it's basically a normal Vexlar size battery, but it has more power in it. And it's lighter. But I like the lithium shuttle because it has like places for USB ports and other things. And it's, you know, a little more expensive, but it looks pretty cool. So I'm thinking that's the direction I'm going, is that lithium shuttle.
There's another new outfit that I just saw on Facebook the other day. Baskong or Basking or something like that. And okay. He's got a bunch of shuttles as well that I shouldn't assume it's a he. That company is making 3D printed stuff. So there's a bunch of different 3D okay. printed stuff that's poking around on the market now too, I think, as 3D printing's gotten more widespread. So that's another one. But I just saw the other day, and they're not terrible price wise. Basskhang is the website. So yeah.
We also saw one idea was, I've seen people use kitty litter boxes, like buckets and those kind of things. One thing I liked, and I don't know if I can do it with a lithium shuttle, but so I have one of those RAM mounts in my
boat. Oh, yeah.
Have you ever used those
before? Yep.
So that's how I mount my Helix 7, one in my boat. And it's really nice because it gives you at least probably like 8 to 10 inches taller. So, you know, when you usually mount your fish finder in your boat, it's kind of low when you stare down. Well, this thing, you can move it 100 different ways because it's on that RAM mount. And it brings it up higher. It's not eye level, but, you know, you bring it up another foot and a half or so. So you're not staring at it as much. And, you know, things work so well on this thing. You stare at it. And I wouldn't mind having a RAM mount for ice fishing, right? Because you could have it up higher. You know, when you're sitting in your ice shack and you're always staring down.
Yeah.
If you had it up another foot, that'd be pretty cool. And you could adjust it. So I got to figure out mounting.
I've seen people just do that on a cooler. So they'll put the RAM mount on a cooler. Yeah. And then, you know, when they're traveling around to places, that whole outfit goes inside that cooler, which is a nice made box. You know, keeps it safe from banging around, or even mounting it on some sort of plastic utility box with that RAM mount. Yep. So yeah, you should definitely leverage that RAM mount system in your mount.
Yeah, so I haven't figured out what I'm doing yet, but I know a couple of listeners, it was really kind of inspiring when they're like, oh, I should do that. So I'm going to do something, and I'll take a picture of it and put it out there when I'm done. But I've only got the transducer and the power cable. And another trend we haven't talked about, but I'm a little worried, is, and this always happens with ice fishing gear, if you don't get certain things at the beginning of the year, they run out.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it just happens, especially the really popular stuff. So I was a little worried that with, you know, COVID and everybody being more outdoors, which is great, like people doing outdoor things, is that they're going to run out. So that's why I bought the ice deucer and the power cable right away, because I know I can find a battery and figure out something to mount to make it work this winter.
I've actually been thinking about doing similar. I have the Helix 5 just as a backup, or if I have somebody go with me, you know, that I have too, because I have the Helix 5, you know, for my boat as well, and that's got the ice stuff on it too. So I'm kind of waiting to see what you come up with, because I might copy if you end up with a good idea. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'll stop. I could go on and on about the Helix 7. I saw somebody auto mapping.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch that video that I sent to you?
No, I never do.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I send you stuff all the time. He's like, I didn't watch that.
You know, I'm maybe old school in that, as I can read, and I struggle a little bit, because I can read information at a quicker pace than I can sit there and watch a video of someone to tell me about it.
Right.
So I would rather read it than watch it. I don't know if that makes any sense. Here I am on a podcast, but for myself, as I ingest information, the reading is a lot quicker. So I don't watch a lot of those videos you sent me. I got to be pretty bored.
No, so there was two things, and we'll stop talking about Helix because I don't want to make this the Helix show, but it has that auto chart feature on it.
Yep.
And so there was a guy, I think it was Brad Hawthorne, I'm pretty sure it was him. He drilled like 6 or 8 holes, and he auto-charted the holes and was able to put a contour of a map of a lake. And so, and this was maybe a lake that didn't have a map. It was pretty cool.
Well, I've never heard of it or thought of it that way. I mean, I've thought about auto-charting some of the smaller lakes that don't have contours, but usually what I find is they're pretty bowl-like anyway if they don't have contours, so there's not a lot of mystery there.
All right, Jay, any other gear stuff you wanted to cover?
Well, I did want to, real quick, because we're kind of running short on time on this part of it, I wanted to mention there's Strike Master came out with a 24-volt auger this year. That's like 14 pounds. It's pretty stinking light. 14.3 pounds. Kind of a run-and-gun type auger. I wouldn't say it's for every purpose, but it might be a heck of an early ice auger. So I was kind of eyeballing that. Price isn't bad either. And then Cabela's, interestingly, and I don't know, I haven't seen any reviews on this yet, so I'm not going to jump on this year, but they came out with what they call an easy drill, and it's a lightweight auger that attaches to your drill. It's one of the drill type augers. It has a really interesting looking auger type flutes, is maybe that's the word, on it.
Okay.
Flights, yep. Flutes, something like that.
Flutes, yeah.
And it's kind of got the Eskimo style ring base on it. I think, or is it Eskimo that has that? One of the other major manufacturers has that kind of steel ring base on the bottom. There's no weight listed anywhere on their website, which I find to be a big miss. Because how do you, you know, they're saying it's lightweight. That, you know, they make these interesting claims that it's, you know, reduces the tool's weight by 1/3 compared to a normal steel manual ice auger. Well, what does that mean, right? Like cast iron steel? Or I guess that's different. It's not steel, but you know what I mean? It's like, so mm-hmm. I always get a little suspect when you're not, you know, you're touting something as lightweight, but don't give me the weight. Interesting right. thing on this is it's got a height adjustable handle, 33 inches, 37 or 40. So, you know, that anyway, one of these things too that you want to see in person and maybe figure out what it weighs.
Yep.
But definitely interesting. $130 or something from Cabela's, so it's kind of in line with some of those other auger kind of cool. Well, it'll be interesting to see how these pan out. Like I said, there's no reviews yet because there hasn't been ice since they were released. So
right.
We'll see.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to see that 24 volt too. I mean, I have the 40 volt and really like it. And this one would be lighter, and I think it looks cool.
Well, I'm kind of thinking of, you know, like I've got the propane Eskimo auger that I bought, and that thing's going to run probably forever, right?
Yep.
But it would be nice to have a early ice option that's super light. Compared, you know, it seems a bit overkill. Like when I've got 6 inches of ice and I'm like, God, 6 inches of ice, I really don't want to hand drill it. But then you haul that big Eskimo, you know, you're like, zing.
Yeah.
And you're through.
That's when you go, ooh.
You know,
how thick was that?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there maybe I need another tool for the arsenal there. So we'll see. We'll see. Not holding my breath.
For sure. All right, well, I think that covers gear, and I always love talking about gear, and just because we had a gear episode doesn't mean we won't be talking about gear again.
Continue.
It just means that, yes, this is just the gear-only episode, and I think we're ready to move on to our legend, right, Jay, our interview? I'm super excited. We talked about this before, but Max from Hardwater Freaks agreed to be on the show with us and talk through everything about Hardwater Freaks and his enjoying of trophy sunfish?
Bluegill.
Bluegill fishing.
Yeah, he definitely brings a level of intensity to the sport. I just think he has some really neat ideas about it, and really into conservation of the big bluegills. And we've actually talked about that previously on our show about kind of the biology of big bluegills and such. And he gets into that a bit in our interview. I sure hope you guys enjoy that interview as much as we did recording it. And so that's up next. We're here tonight with Max from Hardwater Freaks. We're going to do an interview with him and fill our heads full of lovely information. And hopefully we're going to learn something.
I know I will.
Well, we'll learn it. The question is, will we remember it? Because I'm taking notes because my memory isn't what it used to be. Yours might be, Jeff, but mine's not.
It's the same, not good.
So, Max, our first question for you is, what age did you start ice fishing?
I would have to go at the hard age of 5 years old on Golden Lake in Waukesha, Wisconsin, to tag along with my dad. I mean, I was five. I mean, you really don't know how to do anything, but I was pretty much my dad's plus three.
My kids, when they're that age, they just like to play with the minnows.
Pretty much probably what I was doing, because I don't remember it, but that's like the age that I started like tagging along and started ice fishing.
So did you ice fish quite a bit as a kid, or was it a thing that developed for you later on?
No, like ice fishing was, I mean, we ice fished enough that it, I wouldn't say a lot. Like the ice fishing that I do now is like obsessive. Like I could easily see a therapist because I ice fish way too much in comparison to like, I guess you'd say like the average ice fisherman. Like I ice fish a ton, but like my dad was like a, your typical, let's go out on Saturday and then we'll go out in 3 weeks again kind of thing. It was a here and there kind of thing, but enough that he had all the gear, had the knowledge.
So I watched your journey at some level unfold on Facebook. I ran across your site a while back and I've seen it grow and grow and grow. And when we started doing this podcast, I've been wanting to interview you for a while because I think, you know, you've really taken what a lot of us maybe dream about, which is how do you take that outdoors passion and then how do you build that into this full-time lifestyle and occupation? So that's kind of a long question, but how did you do it? How did you become you today?
I would just say it was by accident because we made this Facebook group. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, like the fall of 2015, that this was ever going to be here, I would have laughed at you because I'd be like, yeah, whatever, man. It was like a Facebook group. A couple friends and I were like, you know what? We were on a couple of these other big ice fishing groups and it was just bashing and trolling and making memes and tons of guideposts and all these for sale ads. And I was like, hey, we should just make one where it's just like for us, a couple friends where we can just chit chat. And then it started taking off. And then one day, you know, this company reaches out and then this company reaches out and this company reaches out. Well, it was like, you know, it was all like, oh, this is cool. You know, we got a couple companies working with us. And then one day my buddy Ethan was like, hey, the VP of Flea Farm wants to talk to you. And I was like, oh, I don't even know what to say. Okay. Chief Merchandising Officer and VP of Flea Farm. We actually started chit chat and had a couple phone calls. And he's like, hey, I really want to help out with your next event. And then it just started going from there. So then once I had traction with Flea Farm helping out and then stuff like that, it just... all of a sudden it got bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden I was like, it's because I own my own private personal training business as well. It's a small studio. I do private sessions 4 days. Well, it was 5-6 days a week, but then eventually I was like, you need to cut it back. You need to start doing less. So then I went down to 4.5 days a week. And then I went down to 4 days a week. Now I'm like, okay, if this pace keeps up, we're going to have to go ahead and tone it back again. Because the pace that it's keeping up just with like selling apparel, decals, doing social media marketing for certain companies, I have done a couple store openings for Flea Farm, a couple speeches. I got a bunch of initiatives out there with other companies. It's like, it takes up a lot of time. It's very, very difficult, but it's a dream come true. And the biggest honor that I can say is it was because of who I am as a person and what I'm willing to do to make sure that my legacy lives on to become an example of what others could potentially follow someday.
You had mentioned a couple of initiatives that you wanted to talk a little bit about, Wisconsin Hero Outdoors and Fishing for the Heart. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about those two things?
Wisconsin Hero Outdoors. So I actually play no formal position with the nonprofit. However, I do a ton of volunteering for them. We took on a ton of National Guardsmen this past spring during the COVID. They were National Guardsmen from the COVID response team, Task 64. Mm-hmm. So we took them out kayak fishing and golfing and stuff. I volunteer here and there. I took a bunch, I think it was like 14 veterans out ice fishing last winter. We got 3 trips instead of 1 last year. We're going to 3 this year. I host a huge ice fishing event. We had like 220 people last year. We're planning for 300 plus this year. We donate 100% proceeds, Wisconsin Hero Outdoors. I literally take 0 pennies from the event. Last year, we literally bridged it over me, like as if Hard Water Freaks never existed. I'm the front man. I bring the crowd. I do the giveaways. I do the speeches. I do all everything. But we make sure that every dime goes towards the right people. This is not about us making money. This is about Wisconsin Hero Outdoors getting our game so that they can better a veteran's life. So then Fishing for the Heart is a organization just like Wisconsin Hero Outdoors, where it's about getting veterans in the great outdoors. Whereas Fishing for the Heart is about taking inner city or less privileged children hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, snowshoeing, whatever we can do to get them to go. So they're just two organizations that I volunteer my time, my footprint, my face, and my following to be able to help contribute to helping veterans and kids' lives.
That's awesome. I really respect that. You lending that time and that celebrity, if you will, to those causes and that, and raising awareness. Those are two organizations that I would not have heard about if it not have been for you. And I've seen them on your page as well. So that's, now you'll be able to expose that to our listeners. So I really appreciate that. Back to fishing specifically. What's your favorite species to target?
As everybody knows, I eat, sleep, drink, panfish, but I'd have to go with the bluegill.
All right.
Like it's not just bluegills. It's huge bluegills, 10, 11 inch bluegills. And more importantly, the style that I target them.
So tell me about the style you target them.
So I do something that, like, whenever I tell somebody, they're like, there's no way you're being serious right now. So I troll panfish. So I have a pedal drive kayak. You can't do it in a boat because where I do it, most of the spots that I do it on, the boat will scare them off. But if you troll them in a kayak that makes no noise and has a much smaller shadow footprint. So my kayak has pedals and a down scanner so I can watch. I can watch the depth, what's underneath me. I can watch my speed. I can watch everything. I have a down scanner on both of my pedal drive kayaks. So I troll them. And in the winter time, I actually hike way back into no man's land lakes where nobody else fishes. If you come across somebody else back there in some of these lakes where you're on foot hiking, you know, some of these lakes are 1.3, 1.2 miles into the woods. You come across somebody else, you get that look of like, why are you here? who told you about this spot?
Yeah.
So like, we've had
those moments.
So it's like, you know, we had a guy at one of our lakes up by not far from Minocqua. And they were like, where are you guys going? And I was like, same place you were. And they're like, oh, there's no fish out there. And I was like, oh, you sure you didn't catch a bunch of 11 inch bluegills? And he goes, oh, so you already know. And I was like, yeah, right off the rock hump. And he's like, okay, so yeah, we're not hiding anything.
So what's the biggest bluegill you've ever caught? What would get you excited if you caught it today for size of bluegill?
Something bigger than 11 inches, because I've caught, this year alone, I caught, I think it was 3 at 11. I can't break the 11 mark. Last year I caught, in total, I've caught 9 bluegills literally at 11 inches with eyewitnesses on the tape measure. I cannot break the 11 inch mark, but something bigger than 11. But if I were to ever get something real big, I would love to see a 12 plus inch bluegill. The downfall of that is, I mean, that's a huge, for Wisconsin, 11 is huge.
Mm-hmm.
But the state record, I think, is like 12 and three quarters somewhere out of Green Bay. But I mean, you're talking, you're really hoping for a lot, especially when you're targeting, because a lot of these big bluegills are accidentally caught while trolling or fishing for something else.
If someone was going to target, you talked about this a little bit already in trolling the kayak, and that doesn't really work for us in the winter. So in the winter,
you can try, Jay.
We've trolled lakes with an auger before, but if you were going to give advice for targeting big bluegills in the winter, what would your advice be?
Stay away from everybody else. If you're, first off, if you're targeting big bluegills, you should be 100% conservation aware of what you're about to do. Understand that you're probably going to be doing it on lakes that don't see human pressure in the sense of keeping a lot of fish. So you need to make sure you're going in there to catch a fish and release a fish, because a lot of these little lakes, they're the way they are without human interaction for a reason. Mm-hmm. So if you go in there and you start pounding on keeping these fish, you're offsetting the biological mechanicals of that lake by keeping fish that lake most likely doesn't ever see fish get kept from in the first place. So if you go in there and you apply yourself in a conservation manner and you say, oh, I'm only going to keep 5 or 10, that 5, that 2, that 3, that 9, that 10, whatever, that is hurting the population. They are the way they are by themselves without you touching them. So you need to just make sure that you're conservation-based walking into that and make sure that you're going in there for the right reasons. But if I were to give someone tips, and I've publicly posted this before, I would say stay under 100 acres when it comes to lake. If there's a boat launch, don't waste your time. If there's a canoe launch, that's fine. But if it's surrounded by public land and there's no actual access point like canoe launch or anything like that, and you actually have to walk through the woods, make sure it's deeper than 25 feet. because 22 to 25 foot is where a lake will be prevented from freezing out.
Sure.
So, and if it has a lot of weeds, it means it's usually these little lakes don't have a lot of weeds. It's rock humps and just bare bottoms. But so 100 acres, no launch, surrounded by public land, deeper than 25 feet of water. And like I said, just make sure you're conservation based. Like, you are not going in there to leave with fish. Mm-hmm. So you're going in there to chase something that's world class. That, I mean, in Wisconsin, a 10-inch bluegill to a lot of people is, they're like, oh my God, I got a 9.5 10-inch bluegill. Holy cow. But that, to get that 11 mark, that's like a very special fish. So, I mean, the 15-inch crappie mark. For a lot of people, that's a big crappie. I've caught multiple of them. Or the 14-plus-inch perch, I've caught multiple of those. You just have to make sure that your mind is right and you're going in there for the right reason to chase a trophy. There's chasing limits, there's chasing a couple eaters, and there's chasing a trophy. Mm-hmm. So you just have to make sure that if you're going in, it's for the right reasons, and to focus on certain points. And to make sure that if you're not putting in a lot of work, you're probably not going to see a lot of success out of the trophy panfish game.
Wow.
It's like all I do.
I don't know what to say to all that. That's incredible. I think there's so much to think about in the last 3 minutes.
Some people chase big walleyes. I've caught big walleyes through the ice. I've caught a lot of walleyes through the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Some people chase that big pike. I've caught huge pike, you know, upwards of close to 40 inches. I've caught a lot of big, you know, big bass in my life. I could care less. I could care less about walleyes. You could put a 32-inch walleye in front of me and I don't care. You put the knowledge of, hey, this place has 15-inch crappies or 17-inch crappies or 11-inch bluegills. It's like, cool. How far are we walking? I don't care. Let's go see if we can get one.
Yeah, that is just the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, that, I don't know. I'm speechless. Jeff, help me out.
The one thing I was thinking about when you go in these remote places, you must have, you know, we talk about a gear, but you must have very lightweight gear when you're trekking in that deep.
So, yeah, the big benefit of being me, I guess I would say, and that's not being like selfish or cocky with that statement, but being me is I do pretty much work out for a living 4 days a week.
Sure.
So I do have the ability to say, oh, that's 1.12 miles in. No big deal. We're dragging in. Now, last season, we started using Smitty sleds. So, I mean, we're really able to drag a lot of gear in on a Smitty sled because it's like dragging nothing. Sure. So, but, you know, traditionally we'll take no shanty. You just take a sled, auger, you take two rods, a jig box, your bait. We strip down, take the suits off, and you just wear your long underwear, put your harness on, and then you drag the gear in.
See, I usually try to gauge it. How far do the paramedics have to go to get me out?
One of the spots we got into up not far from Anago, so like 45 minutes north of Anago, we got way back into this spot and we had to cross like a frozen marsh that was like, if you didn't have a spud bar, you ain't getting in there. And we got in there and I was like, man, if something happens in here. So like, this is not good. So like, we made sure that we had cell service because like, we were like 1.32 miles in down this, like wandering through the woods on these little tiny snowmobile trails that were like, not, they were like logging roads with no snowmobile trails. So like, we were like really roughing it. So it's like, you know, we really pushed back there. We had never been there. So like, a lot of these lakes we've never been to. And it's just, you got to go, you got to find out. So if I go in there and I catch any fish, I'm proud of myself. But like, when we catch huge fish, that's when we're like, okay, this is worth it. Now we can come back again. But it's like, you know, I'm trying to knock out as many lakes as I can in northern Wisconsin doing this because I openly do know that there is going to be a point in my life where I'm like, I can't do that anymore. So I just, you know, being able to do it now is truly an emotional treasure because when you come out of there, you're like, oh yeah, whatever, no big deal. But if I look at myself in 30 years, I'll be able to tell that story and people are going to be like, holy cow, we should go try that.
I'm envisioning like a huge map on the wall in your house somewhere with like little X's and circles on it. Like, go here, don't go here.
My Onyx maps has like a million points up north. A lot of the areas up north that I've really done this at, every red pin drop, like if I die and my phone's unlocked and one of my friends finds it, touche, bud. Like, by all means, you got me. I've led a lot of people on wild goose chases, because if you look at my Instagram and my Facebook, and if there is a location, I promise you that you are wasting your time by going to wherever that location is. But if someone
gets have a hold, some fun with that.
Yeah, if someone gets a hold of my phone and my Onyx maps, I mean, it's you got the kingpin, because I have like 100 some odd little lakes that I've hiked into the last 5 years. Traditionally, last year I fished, I think it was 46 lakes. The most I've ever fished was just hard water. The most I've ever fished was 49. And it would have been 50, but we came home from that trip and it got up to 50 degrees for a whole week. And we were already pushing the issue with our lives.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, we're done for the season.
So if you were out on one of your excursions, what would be one gear thing that you'd go, holy crap, I left this behind, I got to go back?
Well, when it comes to, you're talking about like the little lakes?
Yeah.
Sonar. Because 100% of the little lakes that I fish, that I go in and scout, there's no map. There's no information. It just, the map will just show public land around it or something like that. So there's no map. There's nothing. So without a sonar, there's a lot of these little lakes where we hike in, come to find out the whole thing's 7 feet deep, or the whole thing is 11 feet deep and they freeze out every winter. There's nothing in there for you. There's no river aerate or nothing. So the fish just die. I mean, all but, you know, the little baby fish that can, you know, live off of tiny little bits of oxygen. So it's like, without my sonar, when I walk out on these little lakes, the first thing I do is drill a line straight across the middle of it, because I want to see how deep the middle of the lake is.
Okay.
Because most of them are bowls. It'll be like a bowl, or like it'll be like an egg-shaped bowl, or like a bean-shaped bowl. Like it'll just be, it gets deeper towards the middle, gets shallower towards shore. So without my sonar, I'm screwed. So it's, you have to have a sonar when you go on these little lakes, because if it ain't 22 to 25 foot or deeper, I'm telling you, you are wasting your time.
So then you just turn around and head out.
There's a couple lakes. We went up by Eau Claire and we hit a bunch of these lakes and they were 25, 35, 40 feet deep. There was no fish in them. Like they froze out regardless. And I was up there with my buddy, Eric Fullrath, and they froze out. Like we literally marked two fish all day and we caught them. And it was like, other than that, we didn't mark anything. There was literally no fish. And we drilled well over 100 holes on, like, you know, a 30-acre lake. There was no fish. And, you know, sure as crap, the DNR that spring, they reported that we didn't see the report until it was too late. But they reported that thousands and hundreds of thousands of fish were dead after ice season, floating up by shore. And I was like, man, I wish I would have seen that beforehand.
Yeah.
So sonar, like I have to know that it's deep enough or I could be really wasting my time. Because you're talking about a long walk. I mean, 1.3 miles, that's nothing. But you add in snow and the fact that you're sweating and you're going to get cold because of it. I mean, that's a long walk.
For an auger, are you using like an electric or a drill?
Use a Strikemaster 40 volt.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I never not have a hand auger in my truck, just in case. But when I hike into these little lakes, we almost never bring the power auger. We always bring the hand auger. I'd rather, because we do it early ice. Okay. If you look at northern Wisconsin, I mean, once like December 20th hits, you're talking, that is way too much snow to be hoping that you're about to drag through that snow. There's no snowmobile tracks. There's no ATV tracks. That's just deep snow. You're not getting to those lakes.
That's getting out there when you're getting out there 50 times for early ice.
You know, I'll hit like 40 some odd lakes a season, you know, upper 30s. Yep. 40 some odd lakes a season throughout the whole ice season.
Sure.
But early ice, we never fish a lake more than once. We build a list. And then as the season goes on, then we're like, all right, these lakes were good. Let's go back. So then the ones that are closer, we'll go back, you know, once, you know, late ice or mid season, if it's not too far.
That's really cool, Max. In our show, we always do an ice fishing legend, and you're kind of our legend today, by the way, but I would like to ask you, can you share with us your favorite ice fishing story or the craziest thing? So usually a legend is this really cool story or a really weird thing that happened. Like we had a show on a guy with no eyebrows once. That was a weird thing.
He did not have eyebrows.
Too far back in the woods in Minnesota. You'll have to find the episode, but it still wakes me up at night with chills. But, you know, so something like that, like what is your, like, if you're standing around and you're telling a story, what's your favorite story?
I mean, there's so many. There's simple stories. There's difficult stories. If I were to pick the most difficult story, not legend person, but legend is in the story. It have to be two or three seasons ago. I was walking back in the woods and I was with my buddy Danny at the time. And that was one of the lakes that we were like 1.36 miles in, and we were on our way downhill the whole way. And we kept stopping and looking at each other, and we're like, are you sure? Are you sure? We kept going. Google Maps failed twice. We got turned around twice, ended up coming back across our own tracks saying, hey, man, somebody else has been back here. Well, no, that's our sled. Google Maps glitch. So, and we got to the lake and we looked at each other and, you know, high fived and, you know, took a knee and we're just like, wow, we did it. Like we got to this lake, and it's a true experience to get back to where literally nobody, no machines, no nothing goes. And you really just look at one another and you're like, we did it. Like we haven't been this far. Nobody comes back here. This is, you know, so cool. And then like the walk out, you get to the truck and you're like, hey, if this is what happens this season, and I mean, we caught huge crappies, big bluegills, big perch back in this lake, way, you know, off the map, is if this is what I get to tell for the whole season, I'm happy. It's one of those things. But if I were to pick a story that involved a person influencing me, it would be, is actually last year. I had a 77-year-old guy, and my buddy Matt Cook was there. I believe it was Matt Cook, but Brian Rittner, my other buddy, was there. He walked past me, and he had an auger, a bucket, and a rod, and he was just hole hopping. He's just a local coming out there hole hopping. We were out of community area here in southeastern Wisconsin. He walked past me, and he stopped, and he walked backwards, and he looked at me, and he goes, you're the guy from the Facebook thing. And this is a 77-year-old guy, and he's like, you're the guy from the Facebook thing. And he goes, keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, that's cool. And then he walked on, and my buddy Matt looks at me, and he goes, if you didn't think you made it now, he goes, you know you made it when a 77-year-old dude recognizes you on the lake. That's so cool. I was like, that's a really, really cool story. Just to know that I'm influencing someone as old as 77 and influencing a lot of younger generations to hopefully be able to just make sure that putting the right thing first can build your legacy. And if there's one thing I want to end that on, it would be, you guys have heard of Trailer Park Boys, right? The show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the TV series Trailer Park Boys, big, funny, bunch of drunk guys, you know, having a good time in the trailer park. They're all comedians in Canada. There's a guy named Jim Leahy. Little does everybody know, and in the real world, his name is John Dunsworth. And he's actually a very inspirational, very wealthy, smart man who spent a lot of time by himself enjoying life. And he had a quote, and I live by it. He says, when you're dead, but you're not so dead if you contributed something. So I live my life by that quote, because it's like, when I die, I want people, like I said earlier, to just say, Max always did the right thing, and that's it.
That's cool. I think I've said that's cool about 25 times during this interview.
Yeah, no, that was great.
We really appreciate you taking the time to meet with us today and to share a little bit about your life.
This is the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Jeff and Jason.
So that was Max with Hardwater Freaks. We really, really appreciate him taking time out of his evening to speak with us and to share his knowledge and love for the sport with us. So be sure to check him out over at Hardwater Freaks on Facebook. And I think that's all we've got for tonight, Jeff, huh?
Yeah, that was a great show. It was great to have Max on from Hardwater Freaks, and hopefully we'll be out there ice fishing soon.
Gosh, I would just hope maybe our next episode will actually be talking about ice.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
Thanks, everybody. Tight lines.
Cheers.
Five.
You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.